This is DW News live from Berlin. The coronavirus will claim many more lives in Germany. That's the forecast from the head of the country's public health agency, who warns an increasing number of elderly people are becoming infected. Daily death this week reached their highest level since the beginning of the pandemic. Also coming up, the coronavirus vaccine developed by BioNTech Pfizer has been greenlit by the first national regulator. We'll look at how Germany's flag carrier Lufthansa is gearing up to fly it around the world. And a key architect of the European Union and the G7 dies from COVID-19. Former French President Valéry Giscard d'Estaing led France during the 1970s and laid the foundation for Europe's single currency. I'm Gerhard Elfers. Welcome to the program. The head of Germany's Public Health Institute says he expects the coronavirus pandemic to claim many more lives in the country. At a news conference, the president of the Robert Koch Institute, Lothar Wieler, said Germany had managed to stabilize the rate of new infections through restrictions in the past weeks, but he stressed the caseload remains too high. Wieler said he was particularly concerned about the rate of infections in care homes, where increasing numbers of elderly residents are contracting the virus, and he warned that hospitals are coming under growing strain.
In some regions, we're seeing hospitals reach the limits of their capacities, and as a result, are having to postpone surgeries or treatments. We also see the number of severe cases and deaths rising from week to week. And since both always occur after a certain time lag, we must expect many more.
Let's go straight to our political correspondent, Thomas Sparrow. Thomas, so today there were 479 deaths. That's the second highest number so far since the pandemic began. But that is to be expected, isn't it, when case numbers are higher? Or does it have a different significance?
Well, you may think that a higher number in cases comes hand in hand with more deaths, but it is not necessarily always the case. You may remember, for example, the first wave of the pandemic here in Germany. Germany was badly affected during that first wave. But if you compared Germany's death rate with that of other European countries, you found that Germany had a low death rate. So it does not necessarily always mean that a higher caseload means also a higher death rate. In this particular case, German authorities are indeed concerned, particularly concerned about the number of deaths. You already mentioned the number of deaths in the last 24 hours, and we already reached this week over 1,300 deaths. And this is certainly one very important element that authorities have been discussing when it comes to introducing new restrictions, new lockdown measures.
Well, German Chancellor Angela Merkel probably had those figures on her mind when she confirmed that a partial lockdown will remain in place until at least early January. But restrictions on get-togethers will be loosened over Christmas, although some public health experts warn of the consequences.
Winter's coming. And German Chancellor Angela Merkel warned it could be a long one.
We had already made clear in November that unless there were significant changes for the better, it was highly likely that the measures in place until December 20 would be extended. And that's what we've now agreed to do.
With a record daily death toll reported on Wednesday, the partial lockdown has done little to turn the tide here in Germany. The question is whether we leave the country in this state of half-sleep, or if we decide at some point to introduce significantly tougher measures. We'll see how efficient the measures currently in place are. For now, the restrictions will remain in place until January 10th. For the vendors here at Berlin's famous Christmas market, this is not the season to be jolly, as visitors will only be allowed to buy their malt wine and sizzling sausages to go.
We need to ask ourselves what to do. We don't know what will happen. It's not really a Christmas market, just a few stands. I was there last year before I flew back to Italy. It was wonderful. I think it's a real shame that there's nothing this year. I'm really sorry.
Restaurants and bars had to close when the partial lockdown was introduced in November. Many are now looking to take out orders and loyal customers to stay afloat. It's a bit difficult at the moment, of course, but we're doing our best. We're open for takeouts with new offers, and our regular customers support us. We'll see how long it lasts. I really hope this situation ends soon. For many, the promise of a vaccine has offered a glimmer of hope. But until then, many worry it's going to be a long and lonely Christmas.
Well, Thomas, the partial lockdown in Germany then doesn't seem to be working. Why is that?
Well, it depends what you look at. So on the one hand, there are some positive elements. The fact that, for example, exponential growth has stopped, that the numbers have been able to stabilize. That's something that we heard from the Robert Koch Institute some time ago today. Yet at the same time, numbers continue to be very high. Not only the death numbers that we already spoke about, Gerhard, but also the overall cases. You had over 22,000 new cases in the last 24 hours. And this essentially means that the numbers are not down enough for authorities to change those restrictions, to ease those restrictions. And that explains why Angela Merkel, the German Chancellor, and also the regional leaders announced to extend restrictions until the beginning of January.
Thomas, let's talk vaccination. They won't happen before Christmas in Germany, as the country is waiting for European approval. How will Germany tackle this mass operation logistically?
Germany is already preparing for that operation logistically, and the first element of that plan is the distribution of the vaccine that will be distributed through around 60 regional centres, very big regional centres. So, for example, here in Berlin, they will be using a disused airport terminal, and through those centres, they will be able to distribute the vaccine accordingly to the different parts of the country. Then the second element is who will have a priority when it comes to receiving the vaccine. So far, the German government, German authorities have stressed that they intend first and foremost to prioritise healthcare workers, people in risk groups, and then also people in relevant professions, like, for example, teachers or police officers.
Our political correspondent, Thomas Sparrow, there. Thank you, Thomas. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson says vulnerable groups in the country will be vaccinated against the coronavirus starting next week. The UK on Wednesday became the first country in the world to authorise a vaccine developed by BioNTech Pfizer. The US and the EU are expected to follow suit in the coming weeks. But doses of the vaccine will initially be in short supply, raising the question of who should be on top of the queue to receive it.
Everyone in the world who wants to get vaccinated against COVID-19 should be able to. At least, that's the idea. But demand for the vaccine is likely to be much greater than the initial supply. Now governments must decide who comes first and who must wait. Most agree that fair distribution should take place independent of a country or individual's ability to pay. In Britain, an independent commission has developed a multi-step plan according to the key factors of infection risk and age. Residents and employees in nursing homes take first priority. Next in line are those over 80 years old, and then healthcare professionals. Then high-risk adults under 65 can take their turn, followed by seniors over 65.
And the most important thing is to make sure that we get people, as many people as possible, starting with the most vulnerable, and then those who work in the front line of the NHS, vaccinated effectively.
In countries with federal states like Germany or the US, the decision will be left to individual states. The US Advisory Commission recommends that residents of nursing homes and healthcare workers be vaccinated first. Germany is also working to create a system of prioritizing vaccinations. Chancellor Angela Merkel says, above all, it won't be mandated. Nobody will be forced to be vaccinated. This is a voluntary decision. The question of who will be vaccinated first is being discussed with the Vaccination Commission, with the Leopoldina Academy of Science, and with the Ethics Commission. But I think I can already reveal this much. First and foremost, of course, we have nurses, doctors, and people in high-risk groups. Only after 60 to 70% of people have become immune to the virus will the pandemic be considered defeated. And reaching that point worldwide will still take time.
Well, we are now joined by Mohamed Munir, who's a viral infection and vaccine expert at Lancaster University in the UK. Dr. Munir, the UK announced it will start the rollout of vaccines already next week. How will it work?
Thank you very much for having me on the show. Good morning. The Joint Committee of Vaccination and Immunology here at the UK has prioritized the list people who will get the vaccine first, and that is, as you've been indicating, first is the older people, people with vulnerable predisposition, and afterward it will be going into the healthcare system, and then minor 80 years old age, and then really tickling down to the age until reach to 50, and that is all on an eight phases approach. We established here around 50 different NHS hubs where the vaccine would come at first, because it has to be maintained at minus 70 Celsius, and then there would be small pizza boxes. Those will be delivered to the care homes where carer and the care resident would be immunized. So that is the approach that is going to be taken very soon, because we will be expecting around 800,000 doses of the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine in the next week.
Well, there's several other vaccines now awaiting EU approval. How far along are we in that process?
Yes, absolutely. Moderna has already submitted their dose here to the FDA, and also they have approached the European Medicine Agency as well for the approval processes. So I am expecting that Moderna approval process wouldn't be significantly far from the Pfizer and BioNTech, and then afterward would be the AstraZeneca. They certainly have some glitches because the number of people those were assessed with the one small dose and one full dose wasn't really enough. Those are only 2,800. So this means that they need to do more trial before that AstraZeneca vaccine could be presented to the regulatory bodies. But certainly in the first quarter of 2021, we will have other vaccines that would be getting very closer to the approval processes. So the future is bright.
You say the future is bright, but will these vaccines be the end of COVID-19, or will we have to get vaccinated every year just like we do with the flu?
Yeah, well, that's the most important question at the moment, because what we have seen so far with most of the front-runner vaccines, including Pfizer, BioNTech, Moderna, and AstraZeneca, is that they can protect somebody from getting severe form of the infection, but they don't protect anybody shedding the infection. So that means the person who is vaccinated can still shed the virus and can still infect anybody in the community. So this means that it would have relatively little impact on to delaying the pandemic or shortening the life of the pandemic. But what it does, it would certainly prevent people from getting died from this infection. And this is particularly important when we prioritize the infection. For example, in a household, there is only two people. There are only two people that are eligible in the priority list to get the vaccine. And then the rest of the family members, they are still susceptible to the infection. So there would be a mixture of people immunized and non-immunized into the population that would increase the risk of virus communicating within the household as well. So certainly there would be a lot more challenges on the way as we move along.
Challenges remain, but there's light at the end of the tunnel. Mohamed Munir from Lancaster University, many thanks for joining us here on DW News.
Thanks for having me.
The BioNTech-Pfizer vaccine has to be stored at ultra-low temperatures. That means getting the initial doses to patients will be a major logistical challenge. German flag carrier Lufthansa believes it is up to the task. It says its cargo operation can guarantee cold storage no matter where in the world the vaccines have to be shipped.
The vaccine against COVID-19 could soon be transported worldwide in these special containers at temperatures of minus 70 degrees Celsius. For months, Philip Lutterbeck has been preparing for this massive undertaking. German cargo airline Lufthansa Cargo is responsible for the transport of pharmaceutical products. The thermal containers can usually maintain temperatures of up to minus 20 degrees Celsius. But thanks to a special procedure in which the vaccine is covered with dry ice, Lutterbeck and his colleagues can also guarantee temperatures of minus 70 degrees Celsius. This pre-prepared airtight container will be delivered to the pharmaceutical manufacturer just like this. It's packed at the manufacturer's plant, and when it arrives at Lufthansa Cargo, it's already at the right temperature. It's then shipped to its final destination. It's also sent to the recipient's pharma warehouse, where it's finally opened at the correct temperature. The temperature of the container is monitored throughout the entire journey, whether it's taxiing in Frankfurt, in the belly of a plane, or even on another continent. In order for this to work, Lufthansa Cargo CEO Peter Gerber set up a worldwide network. We're ready. We could start tomorrow. We've been working on this intensely for months in a task force comprised of our experts, as well as expert shippers and producers. Take our deliveries of insulin, for instance. We're now capable of transporting and delivering it to Brazil in 18 hours. It will also work for this vaccine. Without the close collaboration among shippers from all over the world, it would probably be impossible to guarantee a chain of support in which temperatures of minus 70 degrees Celsius are maintained. A lot of components have to work together in concert. We as an airline and the shippers work hand in hand. A thermal container has many checkpoints where we test whether the temperature is still in the right range, if there's still enough dry ice, and if the battery is still properly charged. This is all especially important when it comes to the coronavirus vaccine, which can easily spoil. The 2.5 tons of medication that fit into each container are not only expensive, they're also expected to be in high demand. They're delivered, whether to Africa, Asia, or South America.
Let's take a look now at some of the other stories making headlines around the world today. Hundreds of immigrants from Ethiopia have been airlifted to Israel as part of a plan to bring 2,000 Ethiopians of Jewish descent to the country. They were welcomed by Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, but activists say the government should be doing even more to reunite thousands of other Ethiopian Jews with family members in Israel. Hong Kong media tycoon and pro-democracy activist Jimmy Lai has been charged with fraud and detained until his next court hearing in April. The court refused to grant him bail over a charge that his anti-government newspaper violated the lease terms of its offices. The decision comes a day after the jailing of three prominent pro-democracy campaigners. At least five people are reported dead in Thailand after monsoon rains triggered flash floods in the south of the country. Officials say nine provinces have been hit by a week of heavy rain and storms, affecting more than 250,000 people. Flood warnings remain in place as more heavy rain is forecast. Bangladesh has begun relocating hundreds of Rohingya refugees to a remote island in the Bay of Bengal. Rights groups say the low-lying island is prone to cyclones and floods and not safe for human habitation. Bangladesh hopes the move will ease overcrowding in its camps. More than 1 million Rohingya have sought shelter in the camps from persecution in neighboring Myanmar. The government in India says it's resuming talks with farmers protesting a series of agriculture reforms. The disputed bills were passed in September and remove government-controlled buyers for farm produce, letting private buyers negotiate directly with producers. Delhi says that will give farmers more autonomy. But farmers themselves say the reforms mean an end to guaranteed minimum pricing for their crops. They've taken their complaints all the way to the capital.
Thousands of India's farmers are far from their fields, instead taking to the capital in protest. As vehement opposition to Prime Minister Narendra Modi's farm reforms grows by the day. They are turning us into daily wage labour. We are sitting here to safeguard our future. We do not want the elderly sat here in the cold. Despite winter closing in, defiant farmers have set up camp in Delhi. They say the new laws that remove middlemen will cut off a vital source of finance and leave them at the mercy of corporations. The middlemen are like ATMs for us. We can borrow money from them anytime. If we get unwell and we don't have money in our homes, we just borrow from them. People are against these laws. Everyone is against them. The government have become puppets for corporations. The government has scrambled to placate the powerful farming groups, but stands by the overhaul. Farmers say they are not going anywhere until the law is abolished.
The United Nations is urging world leaders to make 2021 the year they commit to fighting climate change. New reports highlight the severe weather that broke records around the world this year. The UN says the coronavirus pandemic presents a chance to hit the reset button and do the work needed to help prevent further temperature increases.
Heat waves. Droughts. Wildfires. And flooding. 2020 has been yet another year of extreme weather. Ecosystems like the Great Barrier Reef in Australia, or Monarch Butterfly Biosphere Reserve in Mexico, are under threat. This year is on course to become the second hottest on record after 2016, and the UN Secretary General sent out a dire warning.
Humanity is waging war on nature. This is suicidal. Nature always strikes back, and it is already doing so with growing force and fury. Biodiversity is collapsing. 1 million species are at risk of extinction. Ecosystems are disappearing before our eyes. Deserts are spreading. Wetlands are being lost. Every year, we lose 10 million hectares of forest. Oceans are overfished and choking with plastic waste.
According to the World Meteorological Organization, greenhouse gas concentrations climbed to a new record in 2019 and have risen so far this year despite an expected drop in emissions due to COVID-19 lockdowns. Tourism, hunting, fishing and livestock grazing are playing a role in the crisis. Less visible was an increase in marine heat to record levels. More than 80% of the world's oceans experienced a heat wave, a shrinking of the ice caps, and bleaching of coral reefs are just some of the impacts.
The change in the Arctic is not only for the region, but also for the whole global climate system. The jet stream, for instance, is one of the regulators of the weather patterns of the Northern Hemisphere. So anything changing in the Arctic affects also the weather extremes in terms of heat waves.
There is a glimmer of hope, though. More than 100 countries have promised that by 2050 they'll be carbon neutral, and ambitious new targets are being proposed for a UN conference next year.
Former French President Valéry Giscard d'Estaing has died from complications linked to COVID-19. The centre-right politician led France from 1974 to 1981, spearheading a social revolution away from Catholic conservatism. He also worked closely with Germany to pave the way for the G7 group of nations and the European Union we know today. German Foreign Minister Heiko Maas has paid tribute to Giscard, saying he was a great Frenchman and a great European. Giscard d'Estaing was 94.
He was hailed as a moderniser and a champion of European integration in the 1970s. Former French President Valéry Giscard d'Estaing helped lay the groundwork for the European Union. Born in what was then French-occupied Germany, Giscard was just a teenager when he joined a French resistance group in occupied Paris in the Second World War. He went on to be elected president in 1974 at the age of 48, one of France's youngest post-war leaders. I know that today marks a new era for French politics. That of rejuvenation and change for France. During his 7 years in power, the centre-right statesman helped modernise French society. He legalised abortion and allowed divorce by mutual consent, in spite of fierce opposition from the Catholic Church. He also pushed to liberalise France's economy, and as a strong advocate of technology, he was seen as the father of the country's high-speed TGV train network. Giscard was committed to the European ideal and forged a close relationship with former West German Chancellor Helmut Schmidt. Together, they laid the foundations for the euro single currency and turned their dream of a more integrated Europe into reality.
South Korean boy group BTS won't have to swap their sharp outfits for army uniforms anytime soon. That's thanks to a new law passed by the country's parliament. All able-bodied South Korean men between the ages of 18 and 28 must serve in the army. But the new law makes an exception for globally renowned K-pop stars like BTS, who will be allowed to postpone conscription until they are 30.
They may be a boy group, but for their country's military, not to mention many compatriots, they are able-bodied men. Now, with the new deferment for K-pop stars, are the singing sensations BTS being unfairly advantaged?
Army, we love you!
All South Korea's physically fit young men must serve in uniform, a legacy of the Korean War, which started 70 years ago. And technically, South and North Korea have yet to make peace. And the army life was quickly closing in on the group's oldest member, known as Jin. Just 2 days before he turns 28, the law's upper limit for beginning service, Parliament cleared the way for a 2-year deferment. Other heartthrobs didn't have that luxury. In 2013, one of the country's biggest K-pop stars, known as Rain, was discharged from the army after serving his time. Sports stars enjoy their own special rules. Son Heung-min, a footballer currently playing for Tottenham Hotspur, was exempted from service because he'd won a medal at the Asian Games. But he still had to complete basic training, which he did last year when the COVID pandemic conveniently interrupted the Premier League season. So whatever they decide to do, BTS have 2 more years to set more industry records and break more hearts until their national service is supposed to begin and the music's over.
That's it from me and the news team. You're up to date. Stay tuned now for Conflict Zone with Tim Sebastian. I'm Gerhard Elfers in Berlin. Thanks for watching.
Conflict Zone with Tim Sebastian.
Less than 3 months ago, Alexei Navalny collapsed from apparent poisoning. My guest this week from Moscow is Vyacheslav Nikonov, a member of President Putin's party, United Russia.
Welcome.
Why is it that those who speak loudest for the Russian opposition run the risk of mortal danger?
Conflict Zone. Next on DW.
Yes, we can hear you.
In her last years, German Chancellor, we bring you Angela Merkel as you've never heard her before.
Surprise yourself with what is possible.
Who is Merkel, really?
What moves her and what holds her back?
We talk to people who followed her along the way.
Admirers and critics alike. How is the world's most powerful woman shaping her legacy? Join us for Merkel's Last Dance.
On the green.
Hi.
I'm Neil.
And I'm Gabe.
Did you know that 70 billion land animals are killed worldwide each year?
So that we can eat them?
But it's not just the animals that are suffering, it's the environment.
We went on a journey to find ways out of the meat machine.
If you want to know how a weightlifter, a priest, and a huntress changed us as meat eaters,
listen to our podcast, On the Green Fence.